So meeting Jody again was the good surprise, and Leon dying was the bad one. No doubt about those things, but inheriting the house was both good and bad. It was a $500,000 slice of prime real estate standing proudly on the Hudson opposite West Point, and it was a comfortable building, but it represented a big problem. It anchored him in a way which made him profoundly uncomfortable. Being static disconcerted him. He had moved around so often in his life, it confused him to spend time in any one particular place. And he had never lived in a house before. Bunkhouses and service bungalows and motels were his habitat. It was ingrained. And the idea of property worried him. His whole life he had never owned more than would fit into his pockets. As a boy, he had owned a baseball and not much else. As an adult, he had once gone 7 whole years without owning anything at all except a pair of shoes he preferred to the Defense Department issue. Then a woman bought him a wallet with a clear plastic window with her photograph in it. He lost touch with the woman and junked the photograph, but kept the wallet. Then he went the remaining 6 years of his service life with just the shoes and the wallet. After mustering out, he added a toothbrush. It was a plastic thing that came in half and clipped into his pocket like a pen. He had a wristwatch. It was Army issue, so it started out theirs and became his when they didn't ask for it back. And that was it. Shoes on his feet, clothes on his back, small bills in his pants, big bills in his wallet, a toothbrush in his pocket, and a watch on his wrist. Now he had a house. And a house is a complicated thing, a big, complicated physical thing. It started with the basement. The basement was a huge, dark space with a concrete floor and concrete walls, and floor joists exposed overhead like bones. There were pipes and wires and machines down there. A furnace. Buried outside somewhere was an oil tank. There was a well for the water. Big round pipes ran through the wall to the septic system. It was all a complex, interdependent machine, and he didn't know how it worked. Upstairs looked more normal. There was a warren of rooms, all of them amiably shabby and unkempt, but they all had secrets. Some of the light switches didn't work. One of the windows was jammed shut. The range in the kitchen was too complicated to use. The whole place creaked and cracked at night, reminding him it was real and there and needed thinking about. And a house has an existence beyond the physical. It's also a bureaucratic thing. Something had come in the mail about title. There was insurance to consider, taxes, town tax, school tax, inspection, assessment. There was a bill to pay for garbage collection, and something about a scheduled propane delivery. He kept all that kind of mail in a drawer in the kitchen. The only thing he had bought for the house was a gold-colored filter cone for Leon's old coffee machine. He figured it was easier than always running to the store to buy the paper kind. 4:10 that morning, he filled it with coffee from a can and added water and set the machine going. Rinsed out a mug at the sink and set it on the counter. Ready. Sat on a stool and leaned on his elbows and watched the dark liquid sputtering into the flask. It was an old machine, inefficient, maybe a little furred up inside. It generally took 5 minutes to finish. Somewhere during the fourth of those 5 minutes, he heard a car slowing on the road outside. The hiss of damp pavement. The crunch of tires on his asphalt drive. Jody couldn't stand to stay at work, he thought. That hope endured about a second and a half, until the car came around the curve and the flashing red beam started sweeping over his kitchen window. It washed left to right, cutting through the river mist, and then it died into darkness and the motor noise died into silence. Doors opened and feet touched the ground. 2 people. Doors slammed shut. He stood up and killed the kitchen light. looked out of the window and saw the vague shapes of two people peering into the fog, looking for the path that led up to his front door. He ducked back to the stool and listened to their steps on the gravel. They paused. The doorbell rang. There were two light switches in the hallway. One of them operated a porch light. He wasn't sure which one. He gambled and got it right, and saw a glow through the fanlight. He opened the door. The bulb out there was a spotlight made of thick glass tinted yellow. It threw a narrow beam downward from high on the right. The beam caught Nelson Blake first, and then the parts of Julia Lamar that weren't in his shadow. Blake's face was showing nothing except strain. Lamar's face was still full of hostility and contempt.
"You're still up?" Blake said.
A statement, not a question. Reacher nodded.
"Come on in, I guess," he said.
Lamar shook her head. The yellow light caught her hair.
"We'd rather not," she said. Blake moved his feet.
"There's some place we can go and get some breakfast?"
4:30 in the morning," Reacher said. "Not around here."
"Can we talk in the car?" Lamar asked.
"No," Reacher said.
Impasse. Lamar looked away, and Blake shuffled his feet.
"Come on in," Reacher said again. "I just made coffee."
He walked away back to the kitchen, pulled a cupboard door and found two more mugs, rinsed the dust out of them at the sink, and listened to the creak of the hallway floor as Blake stepped inside. Then he heard Lamar's lighter tread and the sound of the door closing behind her.
"Black is all I got," he called. "No milk or sugar in the house, I'm afraid." "Black is fine," Blake said.
He was in the kitchen doorway, moving sideways, staying close to the hallway, unwilling to trespass. Lamar was moving alongside him, looking around the kitchen with undisguised curiosity.
"Nothing for me," she said.
"Drink some coffee, Julia," Blake said. "It's been a long night."
The way he said it was halfway between an order and a paternalistic concern. Reacher glanced at him, surprised, and filled three mugs. He took his own and leaned back on the counter, waiting.
"We need to talk," Blake said.
"Who was the third woman?" Reacher asked.
"Lorraine Stanley. She was a quartermaster sergeant."
"Where?"
"She served in Utah someplace. They found her dead in California this morning."
"Same M.O.?" Blake nodded.
"Identical in every respect."
"Same history?" Blake nodded again.
"Harassment complainant. Won her case, but quit anyway."
"When?"
"The harassment thing was 2 years ago. She quit a year ago. So that's 3 out of 3. So the army thing is not a coincidence, believe me."
Reacher sipped his coffee. It tasted weak and stale. The machine was obviously all furred up with mineral deposits. There was probably a procedure for cleaning it out.
"I never heard of her," he said. "I never served in Utah."
Blake nodded.
"Somewhere we can talk."
"We're talking here, right?"
"Somewhere we can sit?"
Reacher nodded and pushed off the counter and led the way into the living room. He set his mug on the side table and pulled up the blinds to reveal pitch dark outside. The windows faced west over the river. It would be hours until the sun got high enough to lighten the sky out there. There were three sofas in a rectangle around a cold fireplace full of last winter's ash, the last cheery blazes Jody's father had ever enjoyed. Blake sat facing the window, and Reacher sat opposite and watched Lamar as she fought her short skirt and sat down facing the hearth. Her skin was the same color as the ash.
"We stand by our profile," she said.
"Well, good for you."
"It was somebody exactly like you."
"You think that's plausible?" Blake asked.
Is what plausible? Reacher asked back.
That this could be a soldier.
You're asking me if a soldier could be a killer? Blake nodded.
You got an opinion on that?
My opinion is it's a really stupid question. Like asking me if I thought a jockey could ride a horse. There was silence. Just a muffled whump from the basement as the furnace caught, and then rapid creaking as the steam pipes heated through and expanded and rubbed against the floor joists under their feet.
So you were a plausible suspect, Blake said, as far as the first two went.
Reacher said nothing.
Hence the surveillance, Blake said.
Is that an apology? Reacher asked. Blake nodded.
I guess so.
So why did you haul me in when you already proved it wasn't me? Blake looked embarrassed.
We wanted to show some progress, I guess.
You show progress by hauling the wrong guy in? I don't buy that.
I already apologized, Blake said.
More silence.
You got anybody who knew all three? Reacher asked.
Not yet, Lamar said.
We're thinking maybe previous personal contact isn't too significant, Blake said.
You were thinking it was, a couple of hours ago. You were telling me how I was this big friend of theirs. I knock on the door, they let me right in.
Not you, Blake said. Somebody like you is all. And now we're thinking maybe we were wrong. This guy is killing by category, right? Female harassment complainants who quit afterward. So maybe he's not personally known to them. Maybe he's just in a category known to them. Like the military police.
Reacher smiled.
So now you think it was me again?
Blake shook his head.
No, you weren't in California.
Wrong answer, Blake. It wasn't me, because I'm not a killer.
You never killed anybody?
Lamar said, like she knew the answer.
Only those who needed it.
She smiled in turn.
Like I said, we stand by our profile. Some self-righteous son of a bitch, just like you.
Reacher saw Blake glance at her, half-supportive, half-disapproving. The light from the kitchen was coming through the hallway behind her, turning her thin hair to a wispy halo, making her look like a death's head. Blake sat forward, trying to force Reacher's attention his way.
What we're saying is it's possible this guy is or was a military policeman.
Reacher looked away from Lamar and shrugged.
Anything's possible, he said.
Blake nodded.
And, you know, we kind of understand that maybe your loyalty to that service makes that hard to accept.
Actually, common sense makes that hard to accept.
In what way?
Because you seem to think trust and friendship is important to the M.O. in some way, and nobody in the service trusts an M.P. or likes them much, in my experience.
You told us Rita Skimica would remember you as a friend.
I was different. I put the effort in. Not many of the guys did. Silence again. The fog outside was dulling sound, like a blanket over the house. The water forcing through the radiators was loud.
There's an agenda here, Blake said. Like Julia says. We stand behind our techniques, and the way we read it is there's army involvement. The victim category is way too narrow for this to be random.
So?
As a rule, the Bureau and the military don't get along too well.
Well, there's a big surprise. Who the hell do you guys get along with? Blake nodded. He was in an expensive suit that had never been cleaned from new. It made him look uncomfortable, like a college football coach on alumni day.
Nobody gets on with anybody, he said. You know how it is with all the rivalries. When you were serving, did you ever cooperate with civilian agencies?
Reacher said nothing.
So you know how it is, Blake said again. Military hates the Bureau hates CIA, everybody hates everybody else.
There was silence.
So we need a go-between, Blake said.
A what?
An advisor, somebody to help us.
Reacher shrugged.
I don't know anybody like that. I've been out too long.
Silence. Reacher drained his coffee and set the empty mug back on the table.
You could do it, Blake said.
Me?
Yes, you. You still know your way around, right?
No way.
Why not?
Reacher shook his head.
Because I don't want to.
But you could do it.
I could, but I won't.
We got your record. You were a hell of an investigator in the service.
That's history.
Maybe you still got friends there. People who remember you. Maybe people who still owe you favors.
Maybe, maybe not.
You could help us.
Maybe I could, but I won't.